Dr. Mark Seely in the studio. He and his wife have been up in Grand Marais this weekend, and he stopped by WTIP to visit. We thought we'd get him to chat with us about weather and climate and so on. He's an extension climatologist and professor at the University of Minnesota. Welcome, Mark.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
Thank you for being here. Winter. People are a little worried about this winter season.
Indeed, it started, earlier this autumn when the Farmer's Almanac came out with rather a scary picture for Western Great Lakes and Minnesota particularly, having a winter in 2014-2015 that might rival last year. And, of course, the scary part of that is last year was our most difficult winter from the standpoint of cold, snow, and longevity of any winter since 1978-79. So that set people back on their heels a little bit. I work closely with the National Weather Service and the Climate Prediction Center, and what we've assessed is that winter this year will be highly variable, but it will in no way resemble what last winter was. I mean, we'll have some ups and downs, but we certainly don't expect an extreme winter this year.
Oh, that is a huge relief. People will be absolutely delighted to hear you say that. As an aside, where does the Farmer's Almanac come from? Where do they get that data?
Well, they have a long history of keeping this secret, shall we say, their methodology. Although some years ago in an interview, they did mention that they use historical cycles, they use the sun, they use the sun cycle, and they use a few other analogies, historical analogies. They don't use the same suite of models that the National Weather Service uses. And I had a friend, this was years ago, Ann, but a friend, the state climatologist in North Dakota, did a validation study for our region of the Farmer's Almanac seasonal outlooks, and it wasn't a terribly high score, so I'll just leave it at that.
Okay. Well, I'd way prefer to listen to you rather than the Farmer's Almanac in this year, that's for sure. So, you know, even though I know people are not saying so much global warming now as they are climate change, but I know there's always the constant debate out there, well, if the climate is warming, why are these winters so horribly cold? Can you talk about that and explain that to people?
Oh, sure. We use the walking the dog on a leash analogy quite a bit in my field. Basically, the climate is the long-term behavior of the day-to-day weather as we derive its central tendencies, like its means, its modes, its median values. And then we look at the variation around those. And the variation around those is comprised by the weather, by the individual fronts that go through and bring us the different air masses, the huge fluctuations in temperature and stuff like this. Now, what's important to remember is the trajectory of the climate signature in our region is increasing warmth, and it shows up remarkably in our statistics. For example, some North Shore weather stations here, like Grand Marais and Grand Portage, and down further around Knife River, Two Harbors, and places like that, we see this trajectory and evidence in their decade-by-decade records because their monthly mean temperatures, as well as their annual mean temperatures, are warming. So when you're walking a dog, that's the trajectory. If we call that a climate trajectory, you're going to walk your dog from point A to point B. Now, if you have your dog on a 12-foot leash, that dog's not going to walk directly from point A to point B, right?
Right.
I mean, you are. You may walk in that direction, but the dog's going to be all over kingdom come on that 12-foot leash, right? Well, that's the weather behaving day to day, week to week, month to month. But the trajectory is the same, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the way the climate behaves, and that's the way the weather behaves. And in Minnesota, we have such wide variation that I say those of us living in Minnesota, we have the dog on a 12-foot leash because we can vary all, you know what I mean? We can vary all over the place.
Immediately knew what you were saying. I thought, I'm just picturing my dog running from ditch to ditch on the road.
Right,
you know?
Right, exactly.
Yep, exactly, but yet you're still going forward.
Still going, and we're still going in the direction of warmth. And then also, I might add, and especially those of you along the North Shore that remember 2012 and what happened down at Duluth and Two Harbors, we're also unfortunately seeing the trend of more intense strong storms, and especially the convective thunderstorms that deliver a lot of moisture in a very short period of time. The frequency of that type of system is on the rise. It's happening more frequently now.
Now, that was the summer that the zoo got flooded and so forth?
Yes, that was in June of 2012. And we had anywhere from about 7 to 10 inches of rain measured in a very short period of time, off the charts historically for this area of the state. There's no historical analogy to a storm that strong.
Interesting. So what do you see as far as snowfall levels or totals this winter?
Well, I think we're going to have appreciable snow. We had some areas, we had many areas along the North Shore last winter that got over 100 inches and a few that got 130. I think we're going to see, with the moisture situation setting up, when we do get snow, we may get a lot of it. But I'm not sure we're going to see a high frequency. That's why I alluded to earlier, Ann, about it being maybe a variable winter. We might go through prolonged dry periods of hardly anything happening. And then when things happen, the atmosphere will be loaded with enough water vapor that we might get a pretty good shot of snow, if you know what I mean.
Okay. Sounds good.
Uh-huh.
If you just joined us, we're speaking with Dr. Mark Seeley. He's been in Grand Marais this weekend and stopped by the station to chat with us. You had mentioned before we started chatting here on air about having weather spotters and weather reporters around the state.
Yes.
Can you tell us how that works?
Yes, sure. I'd be happy to. I work with the National Weather Service and the Department of Natural Resources Minnesota Climatology Office. Now, those two organizations run about 8 or 9 different observational networks. These are people who, for the most part, volunteer, and they go out and make daily measurements. They may not make a comprehensive suite of measurements. That is, they may not measure pressure, temperature, humidity, precipitation, etc. There's a smaller subset. There's about 250 people that do that. But they may just, for example, measure snowfall and snow depth, or they may measure the water equivalents in the snow cover, or they may measure a temperature for us, or barometric pressure, or things like that. We have over 1,000, across those 8 or 9 networks, we have over 1,500 volunteers in Minnesota that go out and make those daily measurements for us. And so that's really the source of our state climate data record, if you will, and the reason that we can differentiate, for example, one county to another, and we can talk about the climate histories and show what the disparities are, because we have that rich history of volunteerism in our state, of people making daily measurements for us.
How long has that been going on?
Well, the first observations in Minnesota were the old fort measurements way back early in the 19th century, Fort Ripley and Fort Snelling and some of those places. Then in the 1850s, the Smithsonian Institution back in Washington, D.C., enlisted a few volunteers to make measurements. And then starting in the 1870s, the Signal Corps began its observational network, and that's where the North Shore comes into play, because the earliest observations we have along the North Shore date back to the 1870s.
Wow.
And then starting in the 1890s, both the state and the federal government, through the National Weather Service, began a more comprehensive observational network and started soliciting volunteers in all counties and in almost all cities to make volunteer measurements. But the continuity of that's kind of come and gone. You know what I mean? We don't necessarily, I'm not saying we have places that have daily observations all the way back to the 1890s.
Sure.
Because some of them endured for a certain time, and then maybe the observer passed on, and then there was nobody to fill the shoes. You know what I mean? And so, but we have probably 30, I'm thinking 25 or 30 places throughout the state where we have well over 100 years of records, which is really a very rich database to lean on.
Yeah, it is. And when you said you've got 1,500 people about around the state collecting this data, how does it get, How does it get submitted and used?
Well, using modern social media has become really popular for weather observing. We have a lot of people, of course, use the internet, and maybe they enter it on the computer. They can just come in from making their measurements, directly go to a website, and they enter the data straight into the database. And maybe they even sometimes send along a little narrative report, like, oh, visibility was terrible, like it was 10 feet this morning or something. You know, sometimes we'll get those kind of observations. Others have cell phones, and they can go in on their cell phone and simply send the data in over their cell phone as well. Some we have automated so that we're actually, it's computer to computer. So some observers have computers in their homes that automatically, as soon as they type in the data, it's transmitted to one of our data centers. So there's a whole variety. We still, believe it or not, have the occasional observers that simply pick up the telephone and call Mark Seely, or they call the Weather Service, and they simply give their data over the phone. We still have some of those, too.
That's great. It takes all kinds, right?
It does,
well,
yeah.
Speaking of that, you've been in weather your whole life, I assume?
Just about, yes.
Uh-huh. How has computer technology changed what you do?
Oh, tremendously. It's changed. The volume of data we can collect now is huge. I think we archive about 19 gigabytes of data every week. The assimilation and turnaround of that data, so you can actually begin to analyze it. You can see what's happening over time, or you can see what's happening over geography. And our ability to map those out with some of the digitized mapping programs. So now we can map out with pretty good precision, and we can map out the deposition of snow on the landscape by any individual snowstorm. And we can get that down pretty darn accurate now because of the use of the computers and the software to collect the data and then map it out. So, and also the speed of communications. The speed of communications is just phenomenal. I mean, all of us know, and I'm sure most of your listeners know, that you can go on the internet now and you can look at last hour's satellite image of the Great Lakes, for crying out loud.
Yeah.
You know, you can actually look down and see what's happened the last hour, or you can look at what's happened the last few minutes on the radar echoes, where the storm systems are and what direction they're moving and things like that. So it's really enhanced our ability to deliver that kind of information to the public.
Yeah, and I would assume in terms of predicting events so that people can stay safe or take measures to get out of the way.
Absolutely.
Has made a huge difference as well.
We've not only developed models and methods that allow us to anticipate severe or threatening weather with a little bit more lead time for the public, but we've also developed the communication system that we can so readily warn people that it gets out there right away. And we give the warnings much, much better in terms of threatening weather than we ever used to.
Before we let you go, what new things are you working on?
Well, it's self-promotional, but I'll tell you, I'm writing a revision of the Minnesota Weather Almanac, which came out in 2005. It's the complete history of all significant weather in the state of Minnesota back to 1807. So it has all of the historic storms documented, the stories, the impacts, the consequences. It also has the modern normals, how the averages have changed. You know, we talked about climate change, so I try to illustrate how our averages have changed. Gives all the recent extremes and talks about the future, what climate change might hold in store for the future. That'll be out next year from Minnesota Historical Society Press. And thankfully, that's going out before I retire, because I've been at this about 40 years now, and I thought I owed the public one more expression of our weather history that would be up to date, because quite frankly, Ann, since that first edition came out in 2005, I'm not sure if Minnesota listeners would know this, but we've literally broken thousands of records since 2005.
Really?
Within the state, and all of those really needed to be updated, so that's the reason we're doing it. So sometime next year, they might look for the new Minnesota Weather Almanac.
Oh,
that
great.
Should be out on the bookshelf. I understand, too, it'll also be available as an e-book for those that use the e-readers now. So,
all right.
A technology that quite frankly, I haven't yet adapted to.
Me either. I like to actually touch the paper book.
It's nice to hold the book. Mm-hmm. I still like that, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, maybe we can speak with you next year when that comes out. That would be fun.
I'd be delighted to do that.
And don't you have a blog?
We do. I write Minnesota Weather Talk blog every Friday. It's released by University of Minnesota Extension. So anybody that goes to the UMN Extension website is going to find Minnesota Weather Talk blog. That usually goes out about midday on Fridays. I also periodically contribute to the public radio blog, which is called Updraft. Now, that's a daily blog, and that's another one if you like to keep up on things that are important in the weather. You can read both of those blogs. And certainly for those in the WTIP listening area, if you ever have any suggestions that you'd like to make, I'm open to all kinds of suggestions. I can be reached at mseely@umn.edu. That's a simple one, mseely@umn.edu. So if you have any ideas you want to share or questions you want to ask, you can reach me that way.
Okay, well, thank you. I bet you'll hear from some folks up here.
I hope so. Thanks, Ann.
Thank you, Mark.